Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cos podcast on this Monday morning. I don't know why I just did a date. I feel, Bob, should I do time and traffic? Hey, everyone, it's 10 o'clock past the hour, 50 minutes at the top of the hour. The Gardner Expressway is moving well. The Gardner, am I right, folks? Hi, Bob.
Hi, Matt. How you doing?
I'm good. I just did a TV hit for CP24, so you got to see the magic of me staring awkwardly at my phone, answering questions about the Toronto Blue Jays.
I saw how the Matt sausage is made.
Uh-huh. Ugh. That sounds kind of creepy. How you doing, Bob?
I'm good. I'm excited about the Jays. I'm excited about Halloween. Not so excited about daylight savings time ending.
Yeah, I hate when everyone's like, yes, I get to sleep in an extra hour. And then after that 4 months of crushing darkness where like PTI hasn't even started and it's dark. You know, when it's dark at 5 p.m., it's such a downer.
It's short-term thinking, Matt. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. It's killing our society, short-term thinking.
Yeah.
It was a little dark on the way here.
Yeah.
It was a little gloomy, and I thought for the first time, oh, this is now feeling like the beginning of winter. Because we got off lucky.
Oh, yeah.
One, playoff baseball, which always makes fall more fun. Two, just weirdly beautiful days, like these crystalline blue skies. And you almost think to yourself, do I live in Southern California?
Oh, no, it's been beautiful. It's been a great fall. And by the way, anyone listening, this will be a great vintage for Ontario red wine. This was a perfect growing season. You had the heat in September, not a ton of rain. So a good year, Bob, especially for your Bordeaux varietals.
So what do I do then? Do I go and buy a bottle of wine and then put it in the closet? I actually have a bottle of port from when Cece was born. So it's now like 15 years old. Apparently it becomes worth something. So anyway, sorry. Yeah. So what do people do? You say it's a good year. Does that mean you buy this year or do you buy for the future?
No. Whenever 2025 is released, it won't be for a couple more years. Just put in the memory bank that 2025 was a very good year for red wine. Just so, a little tip.
The funny thing is, Matt, you honestly will put it in your memory bank.
Oh, 100%.
You'll think in 2028 or 29 or whenever it is that this comes around.
Oh, yeah.
You'll be like, oh, yeah, well, that was a good fall.
Me and the other nerds and douchebags. and the way we describe it, it's not 2025. It's, ooh, the 25s are being released.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that like junior hockey? Oh, the 07s are coming around.
Yes, yes, that's exactly it. Or, oh, he's in his under 18 year and all these other... Actually, also kind of creepy the way sometimes we describe young hockey players.
So creepy. Nothing's creepier, though, than the combine.
Oh, yeah.
We're just going to line up some guys in sweatsuits to watch young men sweat.
Oh, look at this man jump. Look at this man. Look how much weight he can lift. Oh, I wonder if he can run under a 4.440. Yeah, and the worst is, you know, if we're being honest, sometimes you can see balls. Like when an offensive lineman is running in his underwear, it's disgusting.
You know, I haven't watched the combine that carefully.
Smart.
But yeah, sure, there you go. Yeah. And also, when you asked how I was, not only did I watch a weekend of playoff baseball, which was really thrilling and exhilarating for a lot of reasons we'll get into, but I ate chicken wings marinated in hot sauce that I made.
That's right. This is the big, you texted me this, and it's the only reason we're doing the pod. Forget the baseball or sports or anything. Cancel the guests. You made homemade hot sauce. How did that work out?
It worked out really, really well. I scotch bonnet, carrots, peppers, threw a little jalapeno pepper in there, garlic, onion, cumin, coriander. Mm-hmm. Mix it all up, put some lemon in there and a teaspoon of honey. And it was really good. I actually think I like it even better as a marinade. It's kind of a ketchup-y consistency because of all of the root vegetables and stuff. But yeah, Matt, I love it. I've become like this homesteader. I don't think that's really possible in the city. But if it is possible, I'm working towards it. I've made my own pickled beets, my own pickles, my own pickled onion, now hot sauce. Yeah.
How hot was it? Because I'm a wuss.
You wouldn't like it.
Okay, because I get my wings mostly mild. You know, I'll try a medium wing if I'm feeling really adventurous. Mm-hmm. But I'm a wuss with the hot stuff. I just want it mild.
Hot is always relative. People say, oh, I love hot. And then you serve them something hot and they melt down. Do you watch Hot Wings?
Hot Ones.
Hot Ones?
I've only seen the clips. I've only seen like great moments of like Maya Rudolph or Matt Damon or Ben Affleck. Like, but I've never watched the show. I don't understand when people treat food like it's a test of your strength.
What are you talking about? The hot dog eating competition.
It's disgusting.
People do this all the time. What do you think the all-you-can-eat buffet is at the Mandarin?
Yeah, but
it's a test of endurance, Matt.
It is a test of endurance, but I'm not enjoying it. I don't understand people like, yeah, I like them really hot. I like to eat my wings where I'm red and I'm crying. Mm-hmm. And to me, that doesn't seem fun at all.
I really like hot foods, but again, it's very subjective. My brother-in-law is one of those people, like, remember in The Simpsons when Homer's doing the chili eating competition and he coats the inside of his mouth with wax so that he can eat the super hot pepper?
Yeah.
I think that this is something my brother-in-law must do because nobody can eat stuff that hot and not implode or burst into flame.
And how's the rest of the family? Were they good with the hot stuff? Or are they?
My wife likes it. My daughter doesn't like hot stuff. But anyway, it was very good and I'm very excited about that.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it again tonight because game three tonight is the game of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to get into that in a bit. But before we do that, let's look back at the first two, Maddie.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, do you find that there are any surprises so far? Is there anything that happened you didn't expect or that jumped out at you as other than the narrative you'd created for yourself?
9 runs in the 6th inning, but a lot of that was against the bullpen that hasn't been very good this year. So, and we've seen the Jays do that. We've seen the Jays have the big inning. So you know what? No, actually, everything that happened, you know, you don't expect Blake Snell to get beat up like he did because he was so great against the Brewers. But beyond that, no, this has kind of been true to form in the first two games.
I'm amazed the extent to which this has gone by the numbers in that everything that's happened is what people said probably will happen.
Yeah.
The Jays had a big inning where they moved it down the line and they put up a big number, 6 in this case, as you say. But that's not surprising. They've been doing this all playoffs long. Yamamoto comes out and pitches a game for the ages. But we know that the starting pitching is the strength of the Dodgers. The Dodgers imploded when they got to the bullpen. But we all knew, as you said on CP24 moments ago, that is the soft underbelly of the Dodgers.
Yeah, so no.
Vladdy's looked good. Our bullpen has been meh. John Schneider has made some interesting calls. I don't think necessarily bad ones, but, you know, he's like everybody is playing to type.
Yeah. By the way, the bullpen was good in the first game. Trey Savage only went four innings. I can go back and look at my notes, and the bullpen did well. And then yesterday, the funny thing is they gave up some runs, but I don't think anyone cared because it's like, who cares? The Jays aren't scoring off Yamamoto.
Yeah, did you feel like it was over when the second solo shot went in?
Oh, yeah.
It became 3-1?
Yeah.
And at 2-1, you think, okay, all you need is one swing.
And the real shame of it is Kevin Gausman, he was so close to nailing the ending. He's in the 7th inning, and he gets the first out. I think it was Freddie Freeman. He gets the first out, and everything is looking good. And then it went from everything is great till everything is not. Just with those two solo home runs. And yes, you're absolutely right. The Max Muncy home run that made it 3-1. It's like, all right, game over.
Yeah, with the way Yamamoto is pitching. So then going from surprises, and we agree there really hasn't been any, storylines that pull you in. And one of them, I think, is the John Schneider as Wile E. Coyote super genius.
Mm-hmm.
We're always thinking, is he going to overthink things or outthink himself? And some people have suggested that Kevin Gausman going out for that 6th inning was him outthinking himself.
I disagree. I think Kevin Gausman looked great.
He looked great. I agree with you. I'm just saying people have made this claim.
When he goes into the 7th inning, he was still well under 90 pitches. And he got Freddie Freeman to fly out.
Was it the 7th or the 6th?
It was the 7th inning. Seventh. I'm looking at the notes now.
Okay.
So he gets Freddie Freeman to fly out. At that point, 5 strikeouts, no walks, only 2 hits. You leave him in. I know you're turning, you're going over the lineup 3 times for Gausman, but he was great. He was great up to that point. And it's not like he was facing Ohtani. Like now it's Will Smith and Max Muncy. It's not that they're bad hitters, but you know, that's not you're not going up against Ohtani or anything like that. So no, I was totally fine with it.
Did you like that Bo Bichette was not in the lineup?
I understand it. Yeah. And you know, that was fine because you knew they were going to pinch hit him he would come in and pinch hit, and he did. And he played his first game the other day since early September. So it's like, okay, we're not going to tax you. He's playing second base tonight. So totally fine with it. I have no issues with John Schneider. I mean, the only issue anyone has, and the right one, is game five, Seattle bringing in Brendan Little. That was the mistake. And all managers make mistakes. That was his. But beyond that, I think Schneider's done a really good job.
I agree. It's a non-narrative. Now, there is one that is true to life in a way, and people are trying to make it work. Mm-hmm. David versus Goliath.
Yeah.
That the Dodgers somehow represent this perfect baseball machine, super high payroll, and that the Jays are this scrappy bunch of underdogs. After two games, are you buying the David versus Goliath narrative?
I am buying it, but in the bigger picture. If no one knew anything about who these rosters were, what the talent gap was, what the money was, they didn't spend half an hour looking at local TV deals and how that revenue certainly played a part in the Dodgers, roster, then you wouldn't think there's much of a gap. But I did see what the Dodgers did in the playoffs leading up to this series, where Ohtani hit two home runs in game one against Cincinnati and then did jack shit until game four against Milwaukee. In between, he hit like 158, and Freddie Freeman did nothing, and it didn't matter. And maybe the biggest thing is the number one thing that kills a baseball team is injuries to your pitchers. Mm-hmm. Dodgers used almost 40 pitchers this year. They still won the division. They were able to outspend horrible injury luck. And listen, they spent their money well. The Mets, other teams, spend their money badly. But, you know, you can't ignore the fact that the Dodgers certainly have an advantage.
Watching Yamamoto pitch, and as you say, he's the highest paid pitcher in baseball, mm-hmm. $325 million. And they kind of bought him sight unseen because he came out of like the Japanese league, never having pitched here. So he's untested, but you know, you got a good feeling he's going to work out. Bat performance was art. Mm-hmm. If you love pitching, it was hard to have it happen against the team you want to see win. But you know what really jumped out at me, Matt? It wasn't just that he had that hard splitter that was obviously incredibly difficult for batters to track, but that he could offset it with a curveball, a 12-6 curveball that dropped in at 20 miles an hour slower, and that he had tremendous command over it. If you go back and you watch his key at bats, that curveball is keeping the Jays off balance so much. I watched this and I thought, I don't know if I buy that the Jays are David in this and that the Yankee at the Dodgers are Goliath. Mm-hmm. Freudian slip there. Used to saying the Yankees there. But in this instance, it's true that when you have a starting pitcher as hot as that, as dominating as that, it does become David versus Goliath.
Well, their worst pitcher is Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah. Well, you know, I feel like that's a good way to get into game three tonight, because mm-hmm. now you've got Glasnow versus Scherzer on the mound. And in my mind, if the Jays are going to bring this back to Toronto, this is the one they got to win tonight.
What version of Scherzer do they get? You know, do they get the one we saw against Seattle or the one that was so bad in the regular season? We didn't see him against the Yankees. You know, and that's the thing, is that Scherzer's been brilliant in the playoffs, but he was also bad a couple years ago for the Texas Rangers. I have no idea, honestly. Like, I have no idea what we're going to get from Scherzer. And the obvious thing, and we're all been saying it, is what does he look like early? Mm-hmm. Is he giving up home runs to Ohtani, to Mookie, to Freddie Freeman, and that crazy crowd? Because that's a great crowd. We can mm-hmm. we can shit on certain LA fan bases. Like, it's not a football town. It's a Laker and Dodger town.
Yep.
That's what that city is. That crowd will be nuts. What does Scherzer look like early on?
Have you ever been to a game at Dodger Stadium?
No, I've not. I've been to San Fran, but mm-hmm. I've never been to Dodger Stadium.
I've been to a bunch. Mm-hmm. And that crowd is smart. That crowd is passionate.
Yeah.
And that crowd is oddly not LA, because LA is so fancy. And, you know, the LA Lakers crowd is LA. It's mm-hmm. all about who's in the front row and who's being seen. But I actually, you know this, I really like the Dodgers. They're my second favorite team. I love that organization. I like it going back to Brooklyn. I love the history of it. Mm-hmm. Sandy Koufax, Don Drysdale, Kirk Gibson, Fernando Valenzuela, Hideo Nomo. It's just, there's so many great stories that have, Tommy Lasorda.
Yeah.
So many great stories have run through Dodger Blue. I really like that organization, but what really sealed it for me was when I sat in Dodger Stadium and watched a game, and you look around, you're like, oh, there's normal people here. Like, it's not all silicone implants and butt implants and people getting their butler to go get them hot dogs.
Oh, that'd be sweet, though.
So great.
That would be good.
Would I get your hot dogs?
Oh,
am God. I your butler in that case?
No, that'd be...
If we're doing American-style wealth prejudice,
that would.
I feel like I'm your butler.
Oh, that'd be awesome. I'm not gonna lie. I don't move. I don't have to miss a pitch. But no, to the point. It feels like if you're at Dodger Stadium, and you could tell me better than I, obviously. But it feels like it's more of a community. Everyone knows everyone. These are people that go in the game day in and day out.
As my wife said when we were sitting there watching a game, and it was Dodgers versus Padres, so, you know, this, like, the fans are into it, and sun's coming down, and there's the palm trees in the background are backlit. It's just, it's beautiful. My wife says to me, she goes, it's the only place in LA where everyone likes each other. It's totally true. I feel like tonight they've got to do it. And the reason why I say this, it's a bit unscientific, but I kind of feel like Shohei Ohtani hasn't had a dominant moment in this series yet.
No.
And I feel like when you give him the ball, I don't know. It's just, I know this is what happened last time in the famous game with the 3 home runs and the 10 strikeouts. I'm not saying we're going to see that again.
And he'll pitch game 4. It's Glasnow tonight.
Exactly. He'll pitch game 4. But just something tells me we haven't had the Ohtani moment yet.
Mm-hmm. We
and if it happens while he's on the mound, we ain't beating them. And so, you know, and Treya Savage is pitching game 5. And if it is an elimination game, I don't love the idea of putting a rook on the road with a shaky bullpen. You know, I feel like tonight, unscientifically, is our best shot, because if Scherzer goes out and he's Hall of Fame Max Scherzer, you know, we got a chance.
Absolutely. By the way, this is how you know there is a David versus Goliath. The series is tied at 1, and it feels much more must-winny for the Blue Jays than it does the Dodgers. The Dodgers, it's like, okay, they can come back. Also, part of this is that, you know, the Jays are the underdog, and that's fine. Anyone facing the Dodgers in the World Series would be the underdog. If it was the Yankees, if it was Seattle, any of those teams. So it's nothing against Toronto. But
the Brewers were the top team in the National League.
Yeah.
And everybody thought they're in tough to beat the Dodgers, who had to play their way in through a first round appearance.
Yes. Yeah, the Dodgers were the favorite against Milwaukee with the best record, the best run differential, and they got swept. And it wasn't close.
You know, the other thing that makes me nervous is we haven't even seen Sasaki yet.
Mm-hmm.
That... you know, this great arm is just waiting there to shut things down. So if you don't get on them early, even if you do get to them early, I feel like you're going to have to get to them big and early tonight.
And also the usual trajectory of an upset, of an underdog winning a series, is they win early. They're ahead. The favorite is chasing. It doesn't always happen this way. We saw Cleveland with LeBron. They came back 3-1 to Golden State. But in general, that's usually the script, is the underdog gets the first punch, and the favorite is always chasing.
It's Fear Fest on AMC, Matt, so I'm going to bring out a horror movie analogy.
Love okay? it.
All right. So I'm watching the original Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
And Freddy, it's the final showdown with the final girl, right? And she's planning to bring him back into the real world by grabbing him, and then when she wakes up, she'll bring him back into the real world, and here's where she can kill him, right? I feel like that's the Jays right now, where this plan is stupid. You are baiting the monster, and you're saying, come get me, but you need that kind of bravery in order to beat Freddy. In the end, she doesn't, and I hope that's not a spoiler for the Jays. Mm-hmm. But when you say it's like you're being chased, there has to be that moment where you're like, okay, fuck you, monster.
Yeah.
Come get it, right? Yeah. Roy Scheider, the orca's on its way down.
Mm-hmm.
He's in the crow's nest. He's got the rifle. And he's like, come on, you son of a bitch.
Smile, you son of a bitch.
Right?
19 minutes in, Jaws reference.
Nice.
Yeah.
I serve that one up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I feel like the next two games are where the Jays have to say to the monster, aka the Dodgers, come get it.
It's a great analogy, and it's a great analogy because Halloween is right around the corner. And
ooh, topical.
Very topical. And horror movies are about the David versus Goliath. That's kind of the archetype. There's no horror movie where the monster is the meek one. You know, the monster is the strong one. In this case, the Dodgers, they are the monster. So, yeah. And the thing is, listening to this, people think, oh, you guys, you don't think the Jays have a chance. The Jays have a very good chance.
No, they don't. Yeah, they have a chance. They don't have a very good chance.
Well, less than 50%. Yes. It is less than 50%.
They have a minority stake.
Yeah, I would give them about a 40% chance. But at the very least, they have proof of concept. Mm-hmm. You know, they've done the coming from behind thing. They've won, and they've won in every different way. They've won with a starter being great. They've won a bullpen game. They, you know, we've seen them win the close games, and we've seen them dummy, you know, the 9 runs in the 6th inning. So both things are true. The Dodgers should be the favorite, but we all can see a world where Toronto wins.
All right. So I wrote down just a couple things to look for in the next 2 games.
Yeah.
That will really be key for the Jays winning. They have to be errorless. And not only do they have to be errorless, their defense has to take away a run or two. Mm-hmm. It's almost like the turnover battle in football. Somebody has to dive and take away a hit that would have been a hit.
It's funny. I was going to mention the turnover thing. If both, for Toronto to win, it's like in any case, you need the superior team to make a mistake. Mm-hmm. If both teams play clean, the Dodgers most likely win. If the Dodgers make that one mistake, and you're right, you need the one diving grab, the one spectacular
play. The defense has to feel like offense, where technically you're not putting numbers on the board, but you're taking numbers away.
We need a couple times where a Dodger batter is shaking his head, he's mother bleeping quietly to himself, and he's going, how the hell did I not get a hit? How the hell did that not go out? Like, what the fuck's going on? You need a couple WTF moments of this, when the camera zooms in on the Dodger.
Either Kirk or Varsho have to have a big night.
Yeah.
It's too much, especially with Bo hurt, to ask Vladdy to carry all the weight. Not having that extra scary bat in the lineup makes it so much easier to deal with Vladdy. And so Kirk has to be a surrogate for that, or Varsho does. There just has to be a power night from one of these guys, because if this thing is a pitching battle again, it's going to come down to a key inning or two. And in that inning, it is too much to ask Vladdy to be the guy who always gets it done. And I think Kirk and Varsho are the best candidates.
Varsho in game one, he was one who tied it. He had the 2-run home run, mm-hmm. and it was the first time Blake Snell had given up a home run to a left-handed batter in over a year. Baseball, the only sport that has like these just crazy cherry-pick stats. But no, you're absolutely right. Alejandro Kirk has been up and down in the playoffs.
He's been looked good in game two, though. Honestly, mm-hmm. He looked good in game two.
He had the 1 run scored was his sack fly. But no, you're absolutely right. I'm happy to see Bo out there. I don't trust Bo yet. And you're also asking for Vlad. Every time Alejandro Kirk or Varsho aren't great, it just means one fewer quality pitch that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. will see, because the pitchers are like, okay, I'm not giving you anything because the guys behind you, they don't got it tonight, so we don't have to worry about you, Vlad.
You want Bo to help you win at least one game, mm-hmm. and he already has. In game one, his walk to start their big inning started their big inning.
And in the 3rd inning, he had a great defensive play as well.
Right. So how much can you reasonably expect from someone who's still banged up and hasn't played baseball in at least a month and a half? Probably not much more at this point. So then you go immediately to who's tier 2. Now, taking the pitchers out of, because the pitchers all have to be good. But in terms of that lineup, you know, Varsho and Kirk, particularly Kirk. And at the beginning of the playoffs, I said, I believe that Kirk is the wild card factor in mm-hmm. all of this. He's the guy I'm watching. He's been an all-star. He needs to feel like a great player out there. If he's merely a competent player, I don't think that's enough.
No, it's not. And the nice stories of the Ernie Clement, of Asim Barge or Nathan Lucas, they're great. But at some point, this is such just an obvious thing. At some point, you need your stars to be stars. Mm-hmm. And Kirk isn't, he's not a star with a capital S, but he did make the All-Star game. And yeah, he's got to come out early, get some good at-bats, scared Glasnow, and it just the trickle-down effect to the rest of the hitters could be massive.
I also think Flew-Hardy needs to deal with the top of that lineup at least once, mm-hmm. maybe twice. Clean.
You're not going to see Max Scherzer.
He's not going to see the top of the lineup 3 times.
No. God, no. No, no, no. I think Max Scherzer goes 5 innings.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of...
That's the magic number for me.
Yeah. Yeah,
if he gives you 5 quality innings and you're within a run, mm-hmm. Max has done his job.
Yeah, and Flew-Hardy, we saw him have success against the Dodgers in the regular season, coming in with like the bases loaded, and was able to get Ohtani and Betts out. So when we've seen Flew-Hardy have some great moments in the playoffs, see, it's some great moments that allow Toronto to clinch the American League. So yeah, it's funny, even though he's a rookie, I feel Flew-Hardy doesn't scare me.
If you're power ranking the bullpen so far, mm-hmm. I think Hoffman has to be one. Flew-Hardy's two, and Sir Anthony Dominguez is three.
I think I get Luis Varland.
You know, he's had moments, but he's also gotten banged around.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't feel confident when he's out there. He seems to give up a lot of home runs, and he's looked good, and he's been shaky. When I see Hoffman out there, I feel pretty confident. When I see Flew-Hardy out there, I feel pretty confident. Dominguez, oddly enough, has been really solid.
Well,
I don't get that from Varland.
As I said before, it's a funny bullpen.
It is so weird.
It's A plus or F. There's almost no middles. There's no, as I joke, the mark I got most of high school. There's not a lot of B's out there. You know, it's either they're great, they're heroic, or oh my God, they're just a gas can.
Do you know what I was thinking about the other day, Matt? Do you realize, you wouldn't realize this, but as an example of what a prick I must have been in high school, I failed grade 12 English, and I got 44%. And I did 51% higher in fourth year English at U of T. What kind of asshole must I have been to get 44% in grade 12 English?
You know, be a total prick. I mean, just the...
It's what I do for a living, Matt. Yeah,
the level of condescension, you must have been like, this is... How much did you have of this is below me? Because for you to do that bad in something you do so well in, like, I wish we could interview those teachers and ask them, what was 17-year-old Bob Mackowitz like?
Oh, my God. Can I share? I may have shared this on the pod before, but so when I failed, I went in to the teacher and I said, have I told you the story before?
It's going to come back to me. I have heard this. I'm already cringing because I think I remember how this lands.
Okay. Well, basically, the teacher said, you didn't do any of the work. And I said, I didn't have to do the work. I already know how to do all this stuff. And she said, well, how are you supposed to become a doctor if you don't go to med school? And you know what my response was to her, Matt?
What was it?
Some of us are just born surgeons.
Oh my God. And I walked out. Oh my God. I would have failed you immediately.
And she did.
Oh, good for her.
And she did. By the way, grade 13, 78,
mm-hmm.
big bounce back.
Yeah.
And the teacher said to me, you know, it should have been 10% higher. Very nice, right? And I looked at her, I said, it should have been 20% higher. What a prick.
What an asshole.
Kids are jerks.
Kids.
Well, let myself off the hook because I was a jerk.
I was not like that.
I was a kid and a jerk.
Yeah, that won't shock you. I was not like that at all.
No, what were you like?
I got along with everyone. You know, I was in the drama club, but I was friends with all the football players.
Mm-hmm.
If I could sum it up.
Were you Ferris Bueller?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's so funny.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, never as cool as Ferris Bueller.
I was Charlie Sheen.
Yeah. Drugs. By the way, the doc, I'll say this. Good for Charlie. He didn't pull any punches, and he was the executive producer for it.
I haven't seen it yet, and I'm wondering, do they make the connection between Charlie Sheen back then and MAGA today? Because he was kind of like a MAGA bro before there was such a thing.
They don't, but you can clearly see when he was going on that tour and winning and all that bullshit.
Winning and Tiger Blood.
Yeah.
And,
you know. Yeah, and all that stuff. Yeah.
All right, Matt. Well, is there anything else you want to talk about with the Jays?
No, we
actually have a lot of stuff today.
Yeah, there's a ton. We're already halfway in. Actually, the one thing I did want to talk about.
Oh, what's that?
Is sometimes you need legal help.
Oh, gosh. I needed it in grade 12.
Yes, exactly. Well, the teacher sued you for being an asshole and they won. Throw this man in jail. So our sponsor, our friend, is Jeff Pollock. That's Jeff with a G, and he is our lawyer. If you need legal help, jeffpollock.com is where you go. He's been friends of ours for years and just a really good and decent man and very good at his job. jeffpollock.com.
I feel like if he had been my lawyer in that meeting,
mm-hmm.
I would have passed.
Yes. Yeah. He would.
I would have gotten the 50.
Yeah. Well, you know what happened is, like, you would have been to say something, and then Jeff would have whispered in your ear, and then Jeff would have spoke and said, "My client has nothing to say." And you'd be like, "I want to say something." Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up, Bob. Let me handle this.
We can talk horror movies. We can talk Leafs. We can talk football. And I've got an all NBA ... because we haven't talked NBA yet, even though the playoffs, the season has started.
Horror movies and the Leafs, aren't they the same thing?
Actually, the funny thing is, no, in a weird sort of way, because horror movies have drama.
Mm.
And the Leafs have been largely,
they're not good. They're not a good team right now.
They're not good, but they're also not bad.
No, they're not bad.
They don't suck.
Or maybe they are bad, because think about this. I'm pulling up my notes.
Okay, well, let's get into this. Let's chop it up on this.
They have played 7 of 9 games at home.
Mm-hmm.
Only 2 games have come against teams that made the playoffs last year, Montreal and New Jersey, and New Jersey killed them. Toronto is a 500, slightly below 500 team against soft competition. What happens when they're on the road and they're taking on Colorado and Dallas and Vegas? Like, these are the games they were supposed to fatten up on. We weren't supposed to lose like a bunch of these games. And Friday's loss to Buffalo, an embarrassment. I went back and looked at all the goals, and the main theme, no resistance. And I know there was no Morgan Riley and Chris Tanev on Friday, but Buffalo had it so easy scoring those goals on Friday. There was one, I assume Buffalo was on the power play because of just how open Matias Samuelson was on the 4-2 goal in the second period. Again, I'm looking at my notes. Just an ugly weekend for the Maple Leafs.
I kind of feel like this weekend typifies who they are because they looked really bad against Buffalo mm-hmm. on the road. And then they were pretty uninspired at home on Saturday,
mm-hmm.
but then wound up winning in overtime. So they turned it on late, and we saw them, you know, win against Nashville in the same way. And that, you know, they wound up pouring 7, I believe, in against Nashville. But at one point, it was 2-2, and Craig Berube called a timeout. And you could see he was not happy with the effort. I don't feel like they're bad. I feel like they're listless. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like they are. They just seem kind of drifting through the games.
To your point, we would say 46 goals is good.
Mm-hmm.
We would say that's very good.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Austin Matthews is on pace for 46 goals. And yet I haven't really noticed him much this year.
I think it's such a great avatar and a great analogy for you to throw out there because I keep thinking Austin Matthews isn't having a good season. And then you look at the stats and it's like, no, he's actually having a really good season. But it feels like there's no impact. There's no life. There's no vitality. This team is dull as fuck.
The most disappointing thing for me is they had to put Nylander on the line with them. And we don't know about Nylander's health, if he's going to be playing in the next game. He skated on Saturday but didn't play against the Sabres. It says like, no, Austin, you're the captain. You're year two. You're in your physical peak as an athlete. You're apparently healthy. And now we need to give you more help, which is going to hurt other lines. Like, I'm like, no, Matthews, you already have Matthew Nyes. Your job, you've got a couple. You got a lot of jobs. But your job is to make the winger next to you better. Not make, you said it before, the shitty margarita, the bad, shitty blender, which is what Craig Berube's had to do. And so that's the one thing that's disappointed me, that they've already needed to use Nylander.
We had this conversation with Tavares for years, mm-hmm. how at $11 million, it was like, well, we can't take Marner off of his wing because what about Tavares? And you're thinking, he's an $11 million center.
Mm-hmm.
He should be able to make you and me good on a line.
Yes, that's the point.
And you don't want Matthews to drift into the territory where you're worried about how do you give this guy support? No. He's one of the highest paid players in the league. He's one of the dominant players in the league. He's also the future of this team. So it's not, sure, you want to surround him with talent that works for him.
Of course.
But this idea that he needs help, doesn't that make you feel kind of gross inside?
It does. Now, to be fair and balanced,
okay,
as we are, my favorite goal of the season,
okay,
again, no children, more time on my hands to go through this, the Nick Robertson goal that tied it at 1 on Saturday, Matthews on the forecheck, gets the puck loose. Easton Cowan pounces on it, feeds it to Robertson, who buries it. I love that goal because it starts with Matthews being physical. Then you got the young guy, Cowan, making a play, so that's always really nice. So there, some positivity about the Maple Leafs. That was a very nice moment.
Craig Berube was supposed to be this agent of discipline who came in and showed the guys the North-South game, and mm-hmm. we're going to go to the hard areas, and we're going to win puck battles. And this team isn't really like that.
Nope.
And don't you feel a little bit mired in the same dialogue year after year? Which is, except now we have less skill. It was always, we have skill and maybe we're not as tough as we need to be. But now we have less skill and we're not as tough as we need to be. You know what those teams wind up doing? Very little in the playoffs.
If you are, the optimist says, yeah, well, the first year Paul Maurice got to Florida, they won, like, they had like 20 fewer points. And yeah, they made it to the Stanley Cup.
But this team has shown this pattern over and over again.
Oh, I know.
People keep talking about, oh, it's the new Leafs. Marner's not here. What's new about this team? It's the exact same defense. Most of the top six is still there. You've got four of the six pieces. The other two, you know, haven't really worked out great. You know, there's a couple of guys in and around the edges. It is largely the same core. You've got the same goalie. You've got the same defense. You've got the same principal forwards. Why do we keep thinking like this is some kind of like rebrand for the Leafs? This is the fucking Leafs. They always look like this.
Can we talk about horror movies?
Yeah, please.
You had it as one of your topics.
I did. I wrote it down just because I wanted to know what the Desert Island horror movie was.
That is such a tough question. The one.
Why are you getting away from the Leafs, though? Are you making a comparison here?
No.
Because I was just getting. Or is it just because I am saying the same things over and over again?
The Leafs bummed me out this weekend. That's all. I'm thinking, oh no, they're not good, because eventually the Blue Jays season's going to come to an end.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see what the Raptors are. They're scoring lots. But eventually it's like, hey, Maple Leafs, I'm going to need you. You know, it's like when you're in a relationship, if everything else is going great, like let's say just you got great health, great family, you love your job, you're fulfilled in every other way. Maybe you don't need your wife to be an A-plus partner for you. But then what happens, you know, you lose your job, you put on weight, you got family crisis, then you need your partner. You need your wife.
Matt, what's that like?
Yeah, exactly. Well, see, the Maple Leafs, it's like, guys, I'm going to soon need you. I'm going to need you to step up and be a good sports partner in my life. And I'm looking at what you're doing, and you're dropping the ball. You're dropping the puck. That's why I was moving it to horror, because I see what's coming. When it's like, what's the number one thing going on? It's the Maple Leafs. How are they doing? Well, they just lost 7 puck battles, and they're down 3-1 to Edmonton. Oh, good.
Horror movies it is, then.
The horror movies it is.
That was well said.
Thank you.
I was watching Fear Fest.
Yeah.
You know, you're always dipping in and out. Not a big Final Destination franchise guy.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of came after my prime horror years.
Yeah.
You know.
I'm with you.
Yeah. But so many great movies, so many schlocky movies. It's just so much fun. And I started to think, if I had to take one horror movie with me,
mm-hmm.
one DVD, one Blu-ray to a desert island.
Yeah.
And picking from that genre, what would it be? I found this a very difficult question to answer.
Oh, God, yeah.
So I thought I would throw it out to you. I wrote down some options.
Okay, so...
But before we do this, let me throw out the criterion.
Yeah.
I think it has to be a great movie, obviously. I think it has to be a movie that continues to scare you even though you've seen it many, many times. And that's a tough one. I think it has to be a movie that invites a kind of a... We'll call it like an interpretive level, you know... You might be scared by Halloween, but Halloween's pretty surface.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you could pick it, but there are other films that are really deep and psychological, and it's almost like reading a great novel. So I think there's something to that as well. And finally, I think it has to be one that gives you that sense of fun, of being scared.
It's a great criteria. Halloween can still be there because...
Would that be your desert island? Because you could make the case. It's pretty much like... It's a Stradivarius. It is so well made.
It is. And the entire movie so much of the movie is through his perspective, even when he's always lurking. Like you rarely got to feel safe. You rarely got to have a break in Halloween. Others that come to mind, The Shining, Exorcist, The Thing. You want to follow on Cabin in the Woods? Great, great horror movie.
Really?
I love
you that. Would put that up so high. It's high concept, though.
It's not making the final cut. I'm just you know, I wanted to give it some love.
It's in the category of Scream. It's a meta horror.
Yeah,
it is. And it has that fun.
Yes,
it is a lot of fun.
Yes, it does. Yeah, I mean, it is. So, which ones am I missing? And obviously, there's a ton that I'm missing.
Okay, so this one's personal, but for me, 1931 Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
Think is pretty much a perfect movie in a lot of ways. And I actually have a picture of Frankenstein in my living room all year round. You have Halloween accoutrements.
That's right.
Probably in the 70s or 80s, like in terms of what's on your wall. Because Amy, like she does, when she does holidays,
yeah,
she doesn't goof around. But all year long, I have one picture and it's a picture of Boris Karloff as Frankenstein, and it's up there on my next to my TV. I just love that movie. Alien. If we consider Alien a horror movie, then I do.
Then does Jaws count?
Jaws does count as a horror. It does count as a horror. I think in some ways it goes from horror to thriller,
mm-hmm.
like buddy cop, buddy film thriller.
Yep.
So it's a bit of a loose mix, but it is a monster movie. So I would say so. But I don't think Jaws is as...
It's a cheat. I don't think we can...
I feel like it's not a perfect fit.
Yeah.
Alien is a horror movie.
It is.
It's a sci-fi horror movie, and it looks so good, and it is so smart, and it's like maybe the perfect movie monster in a lot of ways, the xenomorph. And then The Shining mm-hmm. would be my top one, mostly because Kubrick's so brilliant. You could probably watch it 1,000 times and always find new stuff. So as a desert island movie, you'd never get bored because you'd constantly be thinking of new ways to look at it, picking up new things in frames.
Yeah, if it's desert island, I'll go with The Shining because of that.
Yeah,
because
it's not very fun though.
No,
that's my one thing. Is it's a bit of a downer.
Well, the bar scene is when he's talking to the bartender. Those scenes are always those scenes are fun. Like those are certainly some funny moments. I mean, Jack at some points is really hamming.
When he's
it
talking
up.
To Grady in the bathroom, that mm-hmm. is a creepy, weird scene.
Yeah,
correct him. You need to correct him. Oh my God, that is so creepy. Yeah, you're right though. The scene in the gold room is excellent.
Yeah. So there's comedy there. There's a little when she's backing up with the baseball bat and he's like, huh, and he's trying to grab at her. Like, poor Shelley Duvall.
I know.
When you hear all the stories of what Stanley did to her and just all the mental abuse that he put her through,
100 takes of yelling at her.
Yeah. Like, this is one of those things where. Do the ends justify the means, or the means justify the ends? Because he nailed it. She was incredible. If the idea of a director is their main job is to get the most out of their actors, well, Stanley, you did it. But I don't think anyone likes the way you did it.
There were stories on the set of Last Tango in Paris where Bertolucci and Marlon Brando agreed to sexually... attack, I guess would be the word. I don't know what the right word is, but the female actress, like, do something that would surprise her
mm-hmm.
so that the reaction would be totally a shock. And it was clearly a violation of this woman's rights. And in that sense, you look at this and you go, fuck, I know you're trying to make a great film, but guys, that's too far, right?
Yeah.
Being mean to somebody on set, though, it feels like it's too far, but then you think, you know, people put themselves through all kinds of stuff to get into a mind frame. It's a weird one.
It is.
I tend to think of it as abuse
mm-hmm.
because it is, because of the power dynamic and the yelling and all this. But that one's harder for me.
It is.
That one's harder for me to understand.
Yeah.
Like, how do I feel about that? I don't feel good about it.
It's like eating veal. You know, it's like, I understand this is fraught and that was a baby cow, but also this is delicious.
Right. Foie gras.
Oh, so good.
Right. Now but so cruel.
What, hold on, Bob. I was told that foie gras was when geese or goose get to live on a farm and mm-hmm. have the best life. Mm-hmm. And at the end, they waddle up to the farmer and they say, thank you for this life. I would like now to be foie gras. And the farmer takes a magic wand and goes, bleep. And you know, like an end of a Disney movie, and it becomes foie gras.
I don't think there's a phrase free run goose.
Mm. Well, you know, by the end, they're not running. They're waddling.
Okay, fair enough. So are we both going with The Shining?
Yeah, let's
then?
Go The Shining. Yeah.
All right, well, then I want to do my dot, dot, dot for the NBA because we haven't talked NBA at all mm-hmm. yet. And I think there's some issues here I really want to hear your take on.
Yeah.
Dot, dot, dot is where I throw out an idea. It's just followed by ellipsis in the spirit of Larry King or Steve Simmons, and Matt picks what he wants to talk about. Despite the scandals, it's been a great start for the NBA. Dot, dot, dot. Wemby is AI. Dot, dot, dot. B.I., as in Brandon Ingram, is going to be an all-star. Trae Young is going to be a Raptor.
Dot, ooh. Dot, dot.
Does anyone know what Coach Darko's last name is? Dot, dot, dot. OKC is the real deal. Wemby is the real deal. The Rooks are for real. Everything else this year is up for grabs. Dot, dot, dot. And finally, would you trade Pirtle for Embiid? Because I wouldn't. And that is so sad. Dot, dot, dot.
There's only one place to go.
What? Darko?
No. Well, it's Rajakovic.
What the fuck is his last name?
It's like Rajakovic.
Really?
It's not easy. Yeah.
I'm not scared of last names, but
I am, and I got that one.
Yeah.
It's everything is about Victor Wembanyama.
Yeah.
When you saw him do to Dallas, because Dallas's strength is their front court, you know, with Gafford and Lively and Anthony Davis, and he abused them. Like, it's one thing when a great player dominates a shitty player. It's like, okay, mm-hmm. That's what you're supposed to do. But when he, you know, just did the reverse dunk on Anthony Davis and then later hits a step back three-pointer and he grew. He was already one of the tallest players in the league, or he is the tallest player in the league, and he grew. I think it's the Victor Wembanyama jump that we saw, and I know it's super early, but you watch it and you're just confused. You're confused with what you're seeing.
This is a we've never seen this before situation. Mm-hmm. Kareem obviously was very tall and he had his skyhook. Bill Russell was dominant defensively. Wilt scored 100 points.
Steph shooting three. This is the most since Steph routinely was making 30-foot three-pointers.
I think the last time we've seen something like this was when Shaq came into the league and he was 7'2" and skinny and athletic, mm-hmm. and he was ripping down backboards.
Yeah.
Do you remember how that was his move back in the day? It happened a few times where he would rip the rim off of the board. And it was just this shocking, powerful, almost like when Bo Jackson in baseball would break a bat over his knee. Like, you think, like, even in a world of athletes, nobody should be able to do this. But Wemby's different. Mm-hmm. Like, this is just different. That's why I say he's AI, is we look at this and we go, this is amazing. And I don't even know what it is. There's a sense of mystification about the whole thing. Wemby, to me, your point, I love the way it's just, he's everything. Right now, the last time we were this amazed, you know, was maybe Shaq, maybe Michael Jordan.
I'll go Steph Curry. I'll go Steph and just him hitting those, routinely hitting threes from like 2016.
But we've seen great shooters before.
Yeah.
This kid is 7'5", moves like a guard, can put the ball between his legs. It's just, he looks like a video game character out there.
He's hit the level where every basketball fan hopes he never gets hurt.
Yes.
You know, like that.
Well, that's the other thing about AI is you pray it's not a bubble.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like we're on the Wemby bubble and you just want this thing to keep growing, but it might not. And if it does, it's going to take out a whole league.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's hit that status of please don't get hurt. I'm not even a Spurs fan. I just want to see what that looks like.
Yeah.
You know,
that's a great way to put it. I just want to see what that looks like. You know, I don't have that with Luka. Mm-hmm. I don't have that with SGA. I have that a little bit with Jokic, just because he's 7 feet tall and he's so skilled. But this is a whole new category of, I've been watching basketball since I was like 7 years old. And I've watched thousands and thousands of hours, and not a lot surprises me out there. And every time he takes the court this year, I drop everything to keep a handle on it. It's
totally
compelling and exhilarating.
And the Raptors play, Bob, the Raptors are playing the Spurs tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I just realized I'll tape that. It.
The plan is to tape it.
Yeah.
Because I want to watch it in the morning, mm-hmm. while I do my yoga.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, fancy. But yeah, it's a perfect thing to tape. I just want to see what it looks like up close. By the way, message to Scotty Barnes, it'll get missed because a lot happened this weekend. Barnes on Friday drives at Giannis, scores, Giannis falls over, mm-hmm. and Scotty Barnes, you know what he did? He flexed.
Right.
He flexed on Giannis, and Giannis scored 30 points and a 20 rebound. So Barnes, if you do anything on Victor tonight, don't flex. Just don't flex. Just say thank you or part of je excuse or whatever people in France say.
So I want to go back to this one myself.
Yeah.
By the way, good advice. And I hope Scotty is listening.
Yeah.
He probably is. Despite the gambling scandal, it's been a great start for the NBA. Mm-hmm. And I would suggest that, you know, Barkley and the boys moving over to ESPN pretty seamlessly has been great. The Wemby thing is great. The fact that this rookie class is so damn exciting, that feels like, you know, new blood in the NBA that's going to be really, really fun to watch for a lot of years. And then in a weird way, the reason it's such a great start from the NBA is it goes to show again, people don't give a shit about scandals. Like, we're just scandaled out. A coach was arrested after the season started, and we've already moved past it. It was 72 hours ago.
It's the FBI raided, and yeah, like, I would say the only pushback, and I agree with you, we are scandaled out. But also, I think this is an indictment on the Portland Trailblazers, because no one gives a shit about the Portland Trailblazers.
Okay, that's probably true. But the LA Clippers, we're Donald Sterling out. We're Steve Ballmer out. We're Kawhi out. Like, there's just, you remember we said baseball was like one battle after another? Mm-hmm. The world now is just one scandal after another.
It's true. What has to happen that 72 hours later, we're still talking about it?
There's bulldozers taking down the White House so that the president can put up a ballroom that looks like his own resort's ballroom.
Is it just Sydney Sweeney and jeans? Is that the only thing that keeps us talking?
You know, Jimmy Kimmel got us talking for a bit.
Yep. No, he did. And sorry, my phone was on Do Not Disturb for 1 hour.
And it was disturbing you?
Well, because the hour ended, so it just started beeping at me and it just got me angry. Sorry.
I also think, in a weird way, mm-hmm. one of the reasons why this stuff's going to go away is we're scandaled out, but we're also corruptioned out. When you think about Steve Ballmer may have been funneling money to Kawhi Leonard illegally through some sham company. It's like, oh, so a rich guy is using cash to bend the rules. Oh, no. What will happen to capitalism? You know, in this thing, it's like, you know, Damon Jones is transferring information, you know, illegally that helps the betting line move. Oh, no, Nancy Pelosi. It's like now she'll get the idea of buying stocks with inside trading information that she acquires as a public servant. Oh, wait, that's already happened. I think she outperformed the S&P by 800%.
Well, she's smarter than everyone else. Good for her.
Really, really smart.
By the way, I like what you did there, Bob. Mm. You also went fair and balanced. You know,
I went both ways.
You ripped the right. And
I could have gone with Donald Trump and crypto.
Yeah.
And all of his minions that he enriched with news. This tariff thing, honestly. Like, I was listening to the Peter Mansbridge podcast because I am that guy.
Yep.
And Gerald Butts was talking.
Yeah.
And he said, he goes, okay, enough time has passed that I think I can tell this story. And he was talking about how Trump was at a summit with Trudeau and it was just him and Trump in a room. And he had noticed Trump had that pictures with Trudeau had made the stock market go up because everyone thought, oh, there's probably a deal in the offing, right? And he looked at him and he said, you know, Trump looked at Butts. And he was thrilled with this reaction that the world is reacting to his actions. And he said, you know, if you were corrupt, you could make a lot of money.
Really?
He said it out loud. Of course, that was in the first term. So thankfully, he hasn't gone down that route. My point is, Maddie,
We're scandaled out.
We're so scandaled out. We're so corruptioned out. Like,
yes, and a lot of it is because of Trump.
Just the world.
Yeah.
There is no shame anymore. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. You know what the genius of Trump is, honestly? Like, he's a great marketer and he's, you know, shameless and all these things. But I think the real brilliant thing that he did was he realized he didn't have to prove he was good. He just had to prove everybody is bad.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah.
It doesn't matter if he's bad because he's convinced everyone, well, it's all corrupt. And I'll be corrupt for you.
Yeah. Fake news is all the news is bad.
Nothing matters. And if nothing matters, everything is possible.
By the way, getting back to the gambling scandal, Bob.
Yeah.
I have no issues with it whatsoever. By the way, take the Raptors to win tonight. They're playing their third game in 4 days. It's a back-to-back for the Raptors. And gameplay brought to you by FanDuel.
There's 80 plus games in a regular season and about 15 of them matter. About 40 of them are good. About 15 of them matter. And that's not a great percentage, but gambling and fantasy make everything potentially fun. Mm-hmm. Last night, I am riveted by the Vancouver and Edmonton game because it's the final game in my fantasy league for the week, and I'm up by 2 goals, and there's 7 minutes left, and my opposition has 2 players in the game. And I'm thinking, if I can just get through the next 7 minutes without these guys putting up 3 points, I'm going to win this week. And I wake up this morning, and they had 3 fucking points. And I almost threw my phone out the window. Now, you can say that that's stupid and needlessly torturing myself, and that's true. But it also made me care about the results of a Edmonton-Vancouver game in October.
I did not know you were in fantasy hockey.
I'm in three leagues, Matt.
You're in three leagues?
I'm in a football league, which I'm going to win my week this week.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you very much, Tucker Kraft.
Uh-huh. Had a big game.
Yeah. I'm in a hockey one, and I'm in a basketball one.
I'm in
all of these with Jonah Siegel. He got me in with his group. He's got a bunch of buddies, and he invited me into it. It's like when you invited me to come to the Super Bowl eating fiesta.
Yeah, the Super Bowl party. You came to the Super Bowl party.
And I got in because you vouched for me.
Yeah. We don't have time for that. We got like 2 minutes left in this pod.
Was that true?
You are in three leagues. You have a wife. You have a child.
No, Matt. I had a wife, and I had a child.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.